Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hey, this is Dynamite Dee Dee.
Hey, this is Flash McKenna.
This is former WCW wrestling star Glacier.
This is your favorite homie JR.
And this is Sean Maluta, the king of the Savant Caters, Jake the Steak Roberts. And you're listening to Top of the Morning.
That's right. You are tuned in to the Top of the Morning podcast. I am your host, Eric Ames, right here live on thechairshot.com, the Chairshot Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, all that good stuff. Hope everybody's having a great weekend this morning. I am all on my lonesome right now. The rest of the boys, I'm not sure what they're doing. It's a rainy day up here in our neck of the woods, so perhaps they are still sleeping. I don't know. I'll talk to them later, so we'll see what happens. Today, we have a special guest on the show. We got to speak to him this past Thursday. Myself and Doug Barrel had the chance to interview Mr. Sean Maluta, so we will be playing that for you. Of course, we want to remind everybody before we get into that to keep following thechairshot.com for all the latest news, reviews, opinion, analysis, great lineup of podcasts. Always hashtag use your head. Check out thechairshot.com and definitely be sure to head up prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Go grab yourself some chair shot swag. I'm wearing mine as usual, as I always do here on Sunday mornings. So like I said, we got to speak with Sean Maluta. If you are a WWE fan, I assume you are. If you're listening to this show, you've probably seen him a number of times. He's been on 205 Live a handful of times, NXT a handful of times. So we got to speak to him. This is my second time speaking to him. About a number of things, his career, and then some other fun things as well. So we're not going to waste too much time this morning since it's just me, and I'm not that exciting without the rest of the crew. So a quick word here from thechairshot.com, and when we come back, we will have our interview with the king of the Savat Kick, Mr. Sean Maluta.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis. With attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen, and we are honored and privileged to be joined on the phone by one of the real up-and-coming stars of professional wrestling. We've spoken to him before, or I've spoken to him before, but never on TheChairShot.com, so this will be a little bit different for our audience here today. Everybody, please welcome the king of the Savat Kick, Mr. Sean Maluta. Sean, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm good, man. Just winding down here, the middle of the week. Can't complain, man. What's going on with you guys?
Not much, man. I know you've been kind of been running ragged the last couple of weeks, which we will definitely be talking about right now. So yeah, you've kind of been all over the place. So. We're not going to waste too much time. We're just going to jump right into it. So go ahead and take it away, Doug.
All right, Sean. Well, it's great to have you here. Happy to talk to you. I really enjoyed your talk with Eric last time around, and I'm happy to be a part of it this time. I'm going to start you off by just lobbing you a softball because of any question that you ever get, this might be the one that you get most often because it talks about your family. And, you know, you're associated with a pretty impressive wrestling family. It's almost like a wrestling web when you talk about you know, blood relatives and connections through marriage. It's just a really, really impressive group of people who have had such a big impact on the wrestling industry. And, you know, for anybody that that doesn't know, Afa is your uncle. But could you just give anybody who may not know Sean Maluta too well an explanation of, you know, the lineage to you and your family?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Well, family is huge, like you mentioned. And I actually grew up around my uncle Afa since I was a baby. His wife is actually my blood aunt. And throughout the way, so many cousins and second and third cousins, you know, that I've got to have the experience of being around, you know, the Samoan culture. There's nothing like it. And I kind of, you know, adapted that throughout my childhood, spending, you know, a lot of time, various times, actually living with my uncle and things like that. So it goes far as, you know, since I was a baby. And, you know, as far as the family functions over the years and the get-togethers, you know, it's about 40, 50 Samoans all coming together and, you know, just experiencing all that love. So, you know, my Uncle Afa, he's like a father to me, the father I never had, actually. And, you know, I spent a good portion of my life around him. So, I grew up with him. And, as far as, you know, training goes, when I was 14 years old, he's always had, you know, the training center, right after his stint with WWE. The training center, I was always around, as well as his company, WXW Wrestling. So when I was 14 years old, it was a pretty natural transition, you know, to me. I was able to, you know, since I was a baby, experience life in the business and, just, you know, bouncing from ring to ring. I just, you know, grew up with it and grew a love for it. And, you know, even today, I still stick by my uncle pretty heavily. I actually moved down to Florida when he did about 10 years ago, keep training with him and to keep learning under him. So, yeah, it's been cool. And, you know, even though I say he's my uncle, he's more like a father to me.
So you just touched on it a little bit there. We hear most people that kind of have family in the business usually will go through those same family members to train, like you just spoke about. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, training under a family member? Do you think that was, like, more difficult, or was there more pressure? And then just kind of talk to us a little bit about, you know, making the great move that I had done once before from the Northeast down to the nice sunshine down in Florida.
Yeah. Well, I actually, you know, I'm originally from Staten Island, New York, but my Uncle Afa, you know, he's been located in Pennsylvania and then now Florida. But back in the Pennsylvania days, you know, he had a different locations with the training center. And, you know, I can actually go deeper than that. The first few Raws, Monday Night Raws ever at the Manhattan Center and things like that, he actually took me around back then. You know, I was just probably 4 or 5 years old back then. So that's kind of like where I start to remember things a little bit, as far as meeting the guys and, you know, just falling more and more in love with wrestling. So, you know, growing up in it, it was just a natural transition when I was 14 years old. That was, I believe, the legal age that you had to be to start training in Pennsylvania. And at first, man, you know, training was rough because, you know, I think it was my size at the time and all the bumping that went through it. You know, I never thought about quitting, but I was like, man, am I ever going to get used to this? You know, lack of size and the physicality with wrestling, you know, sometimes you just have to build that up. So, but training, you know, it got natural, and my Uncle Alpha, you know, he didn't pull any punches with me. You know, 1,000 squats, 200 push-ups. He treated me just like anybody else. I didn't get any special treatment at all. And that's the way that I wanted it too. So, it was just a really, really cool experience. He had a lot of guys, you know, a lot of trainers under him that also showed me the ropes, and we actually get in there with me in the ring physically. And he's always been the master of the basics and psychology, character work, things like that. So I spent, you know, about 4 years training, because I had to be 18 years old to, you know, start, I guess, legally wrestling, even though I begged him to work for years under a mask. But, you know, that wasn't going to fly too much. If that would have happened and, you know, somebody found out, he probably would have been pretty screwed. So we waited till I was 18, and then I was off to the races.
Perfect segue.
No, because, you know, when Eric and I were talking before the show, you know, you were talking about being around for some of those early Raws. Your Uncle Alpha was managing the Head Shrinkers at the time, and it's one of those things where, like, on the one hand, you know, you were exposed from a young age, if not birth, you know, being around somebody like your Uncle Alpha, who's so big in the wrestling industry. So, and I'm sure he, you know, I'm sure he's your personal hero as a kid. But by the same token, getting to go to some of those Monday Night Raws as a young kid with some of the larger than life characters, you know, around, I just can't imagine being 4 or 5 years old and being taken around the locker room and you know, maybe seeing somebody like The Undertaker, or, you know what I mean? Like, some of these just larger than life characters. What was that like for you?
Oh man, it's just crazy. I mean, you know, I feel fortunate that I've had all those, you know, times and experiences. You know, not a lot of people get to experience that, unless you do have a family in the business, or, you know, you're a son or a daughter, you know, of a wrestler. But man, it's just, I can't even really put it into words. It's, you know, a lot of people grow up, you know, sports fans, or they're into, you know, different things. But with me, it was just wrestling from the start. I don't know if it was because I was exposed to it that early on, but, you know, I just became obsessed with it, and I just loved it. And, you know, back then, I mean, like you said, an all-star roster. You know, you had The Undertaker, you had Shawn Michaels was kind of first started coming up. You had Mr. Perfect back then. It was just a really cool time. And then, you know, my uncle was still pretty active, you know, managing the Head Shrinkers, Samu and Rikishi. I just remember just having a lot of fun, you know. You know how it is when you're that young, it's hard to remember, like, the exact details of things, but certain things, you know, do stick out for whatever reason. I guess, you know, when you're a teenager, that's when you really start to remember things more clearly. But I just remember, you know, being a kid, just having a lot of fun, trying to be in the ring as much as possible, you know, trying to mimic what I saw the guys doing. It was just, you know, I can't really put it into words, except that it was a really fun experience, and, you know, it was a pretty cool childhood growing up.
And plus, you had, you know, another family member was the WWE champion right around this time too. So, I mean, what more could you really ask for at that point? That's got to be pretty cool too. So moving on to your moniker, the King of the Savate Kick. This is kind of, I had to write this one for myself just because I was kind of curious. What exactly is the difference between the Savate Kick and a Super Kick, if there is any? And what are kind of your thoughts on, you know, the Super Kick kind of becoming, I mean, almost overused, like almost like, you know, the DDT was such a devastating move, and now it seems like everybody kind of does it.
Yeah. Well, as far as the name goes, you know, there wouldn't be too much of a difference. Per se, but the Savate Kick was actual, you know, it was more of the original name for the move back then, before, you know, guys like Shawn Michaels made it famous. But as far as that move, you know, obviously pretty popular in my family. You've seen a lot of, you know, a lot of the guys do it. Samu, Rikishi, Afa Jr. You know, the list goes on. I don't know if it's a part of the Samoan playbook. It must be. It's one of the go-tos. But you know what? I was using it as a move, you know, just like everybody else in the middle of the match, maybe as a false finish, you know, but my uncle saw me hitting it, you know, quite often. And he's like, man, you know, why don't you use that as a finish? And I was thinking, well, you know, I already saw how the business was going. And, you know, everybody was throwing a million super kicks in a match. And plus it was, you know, Shawn Michaels' finish. I kind of didn't really want to touch it, you know, in that capacity. But, you know, he kind of convinced me to use it as a finish. And, you know, my home company, WXW, that's where I've done most of my work over the years. It just really started getting over as a finish over there. And when you think about it, anything can get over as a finish as long as you establish it. So, you know, I was hitting that, you know, in a bunch of matches in a row, and it started catching on. And, you know, I just became kind of known for it. And he kind of wouldn't let anybody else do it either in the matches, you know, to keep that kind of special. So that's really honestly how I started using it so much. And, you know, I wanted to put my own spin on it. So I wanted to go back to the original name, which, you know, obviously is the Savate Kick. And, you know, I just started kind of running with it. And I kind of ignored the fact that, you know, a lot of guys are using it, you know, as a whatever kind of move. And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, do my own thing with it. As far as what I think about guys using it, I just think it's the sign of the times. You know, I really don't have a problem where people use it. I just wish that there wasn't so much no-selling going on with it sometimes. You know what I mean?
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah. You know, guys popping right out or firing back with their own kick. Yeah, I'm not too big on that stuff, but, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm going to use it as a finish forever, but, you know, I've just kind of established it over the years, and depending on what promotion I'm working for, you know, I'll use it more in certain places than others. But I'll tell you what, I don't want to jump ahead, but the Cruiserweight Classic was pretty big for me with that move, because you guys probably heard how big Mauro Ranallo, you know, put it over. And,
oh, yeah.
And that's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool to me, because even though you've seen a lot of super kicks probably in that entire tournament, he still found a way to make mine seem kind of special and almost, you know, a beating Kota Ibushi of all people with it. So I got to give a lot of credit to him too. But you know, it's a move. Is it overused? Probably, but you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, it is that's the style today. So.
Well, I think you've really owned it, and that's what it's all about. Like you said, you know, anything can get over if you do it right. And, you know, and you were just talking about the Cruiserweight Classic before we started, you know, talking for this podcast. We were just talking real quick about, you know, your busy schedule, and, you know, they've continued to use you sporadically on NXT and 205 Live. So when you talk about, you just talked about Kota Ibushi, but, you know, run down some names, man, like Kota Ibushi, Hideo Itami, Tajiri, Brian Kendrick, Drew McIntyre, and now Adam Cole. I mean, just hearing that, you know, who's on that list, like what comes to mind when you think about what you've done as of late and just knowing that you've gotten to stand toe to toe with some of these great athletes?
Well, before the Cruiserweight Classic took place, you know, I was around for a couple of years having, you know, tryouts everywhere. whether it be before Raw or SmackDown, or whether it be at not the Performance Center, but the old development school down in Tampa. I kind of came up with trying to prove myself through tryout matches, and William Regal saw something in me. And when the Cruiserweight Classic rolled around, he thought I was a great fit for it. And, you know, I was able to wrestle one of the best guys in the tournament. Pressure at the time, because it was my first match ever, you know, on TV or with the company, but, you know, the Kota Ibushi's, resume speaks for itself. I mean, you know, he was already one of the favorites, you know, walking into the tournament. So, you know, I definitely had to bring it and do my part. But for whatever reason, you know, I think the match went over well. I think they saw that I can carry myself well. And that led to, you know, a whole bunch of opportunities after that. And like you said, man, the list is pretty cool, you know. A lot of these guys, like a Tajiri or Hideo Itami, for example, you know, I kind of grew up watching these guys. And to be in the ring with them, it's a whole nother ball game. And, you know, you kind of don't think about it at the time, but, you know, it's everything, every match you just have to prove yourself. And you got to be able to go with these guys because they're going to bring it. So it's been a huge test for me. You know, I've been enjoying the ride. You know, I just show up and try to be prepared for any situation possible, whether it be NXT or 205 Live. I think it's pretty cool being a cruiserweight that lives in Orlando that can honestly go either way. Obviously, you know, NXT is in Orlando, so I'm over there, you know, quite often. And 205 Live, you know, I get to any time the WWE comes to Florida, you know, I'm usually around that. So, man, I just try to take any opportunity I get. I've been lucky enough to wrestle with some of the best in the world, for sure.
So with all of that being said, I mean, I've definitely asked you this before, and since we talked last, they've continued to give you, you know, more opportunities, and obviously they trust you in the ring because they're putting you in there with these guys that, you know, they're investing money in there. I guess my first question is kind of for Doug, really, because I don't know who else they could sign for 205. So what's the deal, Sean? What's the latest on that, man? I don't understand why they haven't signed you yet.
Well, it's not really for me to answer, you know. I'm just in control of what I do in the ring and what I can bring. All that other stuff, you know, it's really up to them. But, you know, anytime I'm there, I just try to turn up, do my thing, and just do my best to my ability. And you know, it's a grind every single time. You know, I always try to, me personally, I always try to show up and with a little bit of just a little bit more of an edge or a little bit more of a learning experience. I mean, at any time I'm in the ring with these guys, I'm learning something. And, you know, I just try to work on my game and sharpen things up. And, you know, the rest, whatever happens from there happens. You know, it's just really cool going there and being able to tangle with these guys. And, you know, it's all a work in progress.
Well, in terms of, you know, these opportunities, of course, we were talking about the Cruiserweight Classic. You've made plenty of appearances on 205 Live and have kind of been around to, you know, to see the progression of the show. And, you know, since Triple H has taken over the reins of the show, what are your thoughts on how the brand has changed, you know, and become much more like the Cruiserweight Classic was portrayed to be, with in-ring action being the focus? You know, what would you say about that progression?
I think it's cool to watch, especially what's going on right now. You definitely can see a little bit of a difference. The thing with the Cruiserweight Classic was, is it was just so special, and the energy in that building was there every single night. And it's kind of hard to, you know, recreate that stuff, and especially, you know, with the building and that whole deal. Obviously Full Sail is a more intimate setting and it's a smaller crowd. Every move is going to be seen. And, you know, sometimes in the bigger arenas, it's a little bit of a disconnect, or, you know, guys are still being established, to the mainstream audience. But, you know, so far so good. You know, everybody knew it was going to be a work in progress, but, you know, look at it this way. A couple of years ago, you know, cruiserweight wrestling was pretty much non-existent. And there's so many guys, you know, I don't know if you would say undersized, but there's so many guys now that have opportunities that wasn't, you know, that wasn't there a couple of years ago. You know, guys like Daniel Bryan are an inspiration for the smaller guys, but there's only so many cases like that. You know, now you got the cruiserweight division back. You got the cruiserweight title. You got the, you know, its own show on the network. Like I said, it's a work in progress, and hopefully it only goes up from here. I think Triple H, you know, having his eyes on it is really cool because, you know, I get to work with him a lot at NXT and see how hands-on he is with the guys there, guys and girls there. So it's definitely in good hands, and it's up to the performers to go out there and kill it every night. The main events in particular have been really good the last few weeks. So hopefully, you know, the brand and the show just keeps elevating. And with Triple H in charge, you know, I don't see how it's going to fail. So,
yeah, I would definitely agree. And, you know, I'm pushing for some things over there on 205, especially some cruiserweight tag titles. I'd love to see that because we know Lince as well, where the Lucha House Party thing has kind of taken off. But that will that kind of wraps up the business aspect of our questions. We wanted to try and get into some more fun stuff. And I actually interviewed your lovely lady there, Miss Dynamite Didi, before, not long after I interviewed you before there. So I kind of got to get her side of the story of how you guys met. So I guess this is kind of your opportunity to kind of give your side of first meeting her, because from what I gathered from her, it was kind of like, well, who's this guy, or kind of a thing. So I guess my question is, you know, was it kind of like a, you know, was it kind of like a, you laid eyes on her and you had your little wing?
Well, it was something like that. I'll tell you what, both of us were getting out of situations that we have previously been in, and it kind of happened at the same exact time. And, you know, she started coming around my uncle's company, WXW. And, you know, once we were out of the situation that we were in, you know, we just started talking, and the rest was history. You know, I think it's pretty cool, you know, having a partner with a lot of the same goals in mind, a lot of the same habits, you know, the same lifestyle. It's been really cool. You know, she's a beautiful woman, and she's definitely on the come up as well. She's been doing a lot of work with, especially the women's companies like Shine and Shimmer. And, you know, just every day we always have something to talk to, you know, talk about, whether it's related to the business or not. But, you know, sometimes you can be in relationships where it's a disconnect with your partner because of, you know, a different lifestyle. And especially wrestling could be so crazy with the travel and, how it's really a 24/7 thing, you know, whether it's studying or whether it's hitting the gym, eating right. I mean, it's really, there's a lot that goes into it, and it's just a lifestyle thing. And so it's really cool to have a partner that's on the same page as that. And, you know, it's been really cool.
She was a lot of fun to talk to. You got to be careful with. She told me she was teaching you some not so kind words in another language. So you just got to be careful where you use those in Florida, because a lot of other people down there speak that language.
I'll tell you what. Out of all the words in Spanish, you probably know the curses the most from her.
I'm sorry, Doug. I caught you off. I couldn't help it.
No, that was great. You know, I was going to say just what Sean said. You know, it must be, you know, the wrestling business and the schedule for, you know, somebody who, you know, is in the business can be so trying. So it must be great to have somebody who, you know, can relate firsthand. So that's great, man. I'm going to paint you now with this next question. I'm going to paint you a picture here. All right. So we are at WrestleMania 35. We're at MetLife Stadium, and you, Sean Maluta, you're in the main event. I want to know your fantasy scenario. Who is standing across the ring from you? Is it a singles match? Is it a tag match? What's your perfect WrestleMania scenario with the current roster?
Oh man, the current roster. Well, I guess it's only right I throw some names out that I appreciate watching, you know, work every week. AJ Styles, Seth Rollins, let's see, Dolph Ziggler, and even a lot of the cruiserweights like a Cedric Alexander. If you're talking the perfect scenario, man, you know what?
It's not an easy question.
It's not easy, and you know, but it's something that you kind of always think about too. You know, you always vision yourself being at WrestleMania or wrestling in the huge arenas. You know
plus
what?
You if you don't say, you know, me and Roman versus the Usos, you know, they might give you some crap for it.
Well. You know what? I'm going to go with another name, and I don't know if it counts because he's not exactly there right now, but I would go with a Chris Jericho.
You just made Doug pop hard. Doug is our resident major Chris Jericho mark.
Yeah, I mean, how awesome has that guy been, you know, with everything he's doing in New Japan and everything he's doing with his own crews and stuff. You know, the guy is still a promo machine. He knows how to get a lot of heat. And if I was the babyface, you know, I'm sure there would be a storyline cooked up where, you know, he can get a lot of heat there. And, you know, he's always one of those names that goes back to being in the top five. You know what I mean? You know, you got Shawn Michaels and guys like Eddie Guerrero and Ric Flair in there for me. But if we're talking, you know, a little bit more realistic, you know, Chris Jericho is still in the game. So I would say him.
Usually when we do this on the show, it's a negative thing, but I guess we'll turn it into a positive. So I don't know, Doug. I think we gotta do it to Sean.
You know what? You just made the list. Oh no.
There it goes. There's the story right there.
Yeah. No, the easiest thing in the world is selling me on you know, Chris Jericho's career. And yeah, I'm not gonna say too much, but you were kind of saying it, Sean. You know, like he's so good at getting the guy he's working with over, and I think that's really kind of a skill that is really like I don't want to say it's like, you know, under the radar, but like, you know, people work on getting themselves over. He's always been great at getting the guy he's working with over. And I think that's pretty
cool.
he's
pushing 50 at this point. Look at what he's doing. I mean, I don't have to convince you.
Oh, yeah.
I know this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, there's always top fives and top 10 talk going around. And, you know, ultimately it comes down to favorites and preferences. I mean, there really is no greatest of all time kind of thing. It's because you can make so many cases for people and everything is subjective. So when I think of my favorites and realistic and WrestleMania, I mean, you know, obviously I have to pick somebody that's still active. So, you know, Jericho is always pretty high on my list. And, you know, Shawn Michaels, I don't think he's coming out of retirement anytime soon, even though they're kind of teasing it. Ric Flair, he's retired. You know, I'm just naming guys that often come up in my top fives, and Jericho is still the active one, and so I would say him for sure.
Well, definitely. And, you know, speaking of top fives, you know, and speaking of family, because you mentioned Jimmy and Jay, they're one of my favorite tag teams, definitely of this decade, definitely rank up there in terms of all time. I remember when they had their long initial run, I remember saying to Eric that there's two guys that I don't ever picture turning heel, and yet they did it. And not only did they do it, man, I love it. I love every bit of it. And those guys, you know, they're video game guys, and we've seen them a bunch on Up, Up, Down, Down. And, there's definitely some gamers that listen to this podcast, so I got to put this question up there. Let's say you're Xavier Woods' guest on the next episode of the show. What old school game are you playing on that show, and what's in your console at home right now?
Oh, man. Well, I do want to disclaimer, I'm not that big of a gamer, so sorry to disappoint. But if anything, I do get down with the sports games like Madden and you know, NBA 2K and things like that. It seems like Madden is pretty popular on Xavier's show. You know, so I'd probably go with Madden, to be honest. That's probably the game that I'm the most decent at. You know, I grew up having a lot of the systems though, like Sega, and I had the original Nintendo. I wasn't really a big 64 guy, but I did have Sega. I had all the PlayStations. You know, but I've always come back to the ones that keep me going and keep me interested for some reason is the sports games. I don't know if it's the competitive part or whatever, but you know, I would say something like Madden for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely right in my wheelhouse, and we will get to a football question here very soon. But you're also a huge Wu-Tang Clan guy. I am also a Wu-Tang Clan guy. So again, we give the hard-hitting questions here on Top of the Morning. Favorite album, favorite song, favorite member. Who you got?
Oh man, that's tough. I mean,
it's like asking you to pick your favorite kid.
Yeah, I definitely have to go with the first album, just because I think it was just groundbreaking at the time. You know, you got Cream, you got Bring the Ruckus. There's just so many. As far as the favorite member.
I mean, it can't be You God. I don't think anybody says You God. Doug's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I was actually at a concert. You know, the rapper The Game from the West Coast. He was in New York like probably 10 years ago. It was the day that his album came out, and he, you know, so many surprises he brought out, and. To my surprise, he brought out like damn near half of the Wu-Tang. So that was my first time getting to see them live. I'll go with like a Method Man or like a Ghostface for sure.
Yeah, I would have to. My favorite member and favorite song are both Method Man. So we're on the same page there as well. I mean, that's pretty much it. Yeah. We only got one more question for you before we wrap things up. Like I just touched on. Football season is right around the corner, and I am not sure if you remember this or not, but after the last time I interviewed you, after we stopped recording, we kind of shot the breeze, I guess, a little bit for a few minutes, and I made the offhand remark, and I believe this we talked in like a December, so we weren't quite in playoff time yet, but you're a Falcons fan, and I'm from New England, and I remember saying to you, see you in the Super Bowl. I don't know if you remember. How did that game go down? I'm not sure if you remember.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'll tell you what, man. I still fully haven't recovered from that. I just think it was borderline ridiculous with that kind of lead. There's no excuse for that. I mean, damn, I don't think I've ever been more depressed watching the game. I mean,
oh my God.
You know, because
Sean's never going to want to talk to me ever again.
Man, goddamn Patriots, man. But hey, man, you got to give it to him. It was when Tom Brady's on and when guys are making those kind of catches for him, what the hell can you say? You know, I think we could have just kept the lead by running the ball, obviously. There was no reason to start throwing and getting panicky in the end. But it's the Super Bowl, man. Things happen. But it was a tough pill to swallow. You know, hopefully we can rebound. We came pretty close again last year, you know, representing, but then the Eagles knocked us out. So, it's the Falcons have always been a solid team, especially when Julio Jones got there. So, you know, if they put all the pieces together, there's no doubt. I have no doubt that they can actually, you know, they can get back at least to the NFC Championship and represent in the Super Bowl. But yeah, man, it's that was a tough one.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we have a buddy of ours that is actually a Seahawks fan, so he felt your pain. And Doug is actually a 49ers fan, so you're welcome, Doug, for your quarterback. By the way,
so excited.
You kind of just touched on it a little bit there, Sean. You know, we're all fantasy football guys. We play in a league together. You know, you guys picked up Calvin Ridley this year, so I think he's going to take some attention off of Julio. So what are you kind of expecting out of the Falcons this year? Are you seeing them contending with the Eagles possibly, or even the Rams for the NFC? Or do you see, you know, anybody really kind of contending with them for that division?
Well, the NFC South was, it's been pretty tough like the last year or two. I think last year it was a dogfight in the end, but, the Saints and the Panthers are there. The Bucks are kind of the weak link of the group. I got no doubt. I mean, it's not like they lost too many pieces. I think the run game has gotten really good with Freeman. He was a top five running back just not too long ago. So they definitely got the tools. You know, I think Matt Ryan, I just think sometimes it's the play calling, because I know these guys can go, you know, they've had 13-3 seasons, you know, before, so they can definitely go. I think the defense can only get better. The head coach that has a defensive mind. I got no doubt that they can get back to where they were. And, you know, like I said, man, they had the Super Bowl wrapped up and they should have kept that lead. So when you're that close, you know, it can go either way. It can motivate you or it can kill you for a couple of years. So hopefully the motivation level stays high. You know, they got the new stadium now in Atlanta. Maybe that'll add, you know, a little bit of a spark. But I think they're going to do their thing, man. And, you know, it's all about just sealing the deal next time, you know, that big opportunity rolls around. And if the Eagles did it with freaking Nick Foles, then I think we could do it.
Yeah, I mean, the one positive thing that, you know, you can look forward to is Drew Brees definitely ain't getting any younger. And, I mean, it's only a matter of time before Cam Newton is done for his career because of getting destroyed all the time. So, and like you said, the Buccaneers are a total dumpster fire. So, I mean, it can't get any worse for them.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm hoping for a good year. You know, how much controversy is surrounding football right now. So, you know, hopefully, man, just the games are good and, hopefully they put out an entertaining product and people can focus on the games. Out of all the sports, I'm probably a football guy the most and probably basketball second. I kind of grew up loving baseball and playing baseball. I forgot to mention that too, but man, just the game has gotten, I mean, it's always been slow, but I don't know if I just grew out of it or lost interest, but, you know, once I really started getting into football, I mean, that's like the bee's knees to me. And, you know, whether it's the Falcons or not, you know, I try to catch any game that's on. So, yeah, football's where it's at.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hopefully the action will be good this year. I mean, the controversy stuff, me and Doug could talk for another hour, just me and him, about that. So we won't even go there.
Right.
So, I mean, that's pretty much going to wrap it up. What do you got coming up, Sean? Where can people see you? Where can they follow you on social media, man?
I'm in West Palm Beach on August 18th, Platinum Pro Wrestling, which I work for often over there. They're usually South Florida, Fort Lauderdale area, but this time they're going to explore the West Palm market. And September 9th, I'm expected to go to India for the first time. You know, supposed to be having a little mini tour over there with a few shows. It'll be myself, Afa Jr., and they haven't announced the talent yet. But, you know, stay tuned to my social media and I'll be posting about all that. I'm really excited about it because I've yet to wrestle outside of the country. So India would definitely be an experience. And the way that I hear wrestling is received over there, you know, that's pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be on September 9th. You can always catch me around WXW Wrestling. On Mondays and Wednesdays, I'm at the Wild Samoan Training Center, wildsamoan.com for that. If anybody's, you know, aspiring to be in the business and give it a try, my uncle has one of the most well-known schools now for probably over 20 years. So there's a lot of experience there, and that's located in right outside of Orlando in Mineola, Florida. And we also have one that Samu runs over there in Allentown, Pennsylvania. So the Wild Samoan Training Center. And that's about it, man. Social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Savatkick. You can find me on Facebook at Sean Maluta. That's about it.
All right. That was our chat with Sean Maluta. Sean is really one of the great guys in the wrestling industry. You know, I've done a lot of interviews and he is one of only a handful of people that still kind of keeps in contact with me when they really don't have to. So, and obviously he put up with our stupidity there, or, well, I can't speak for Doug, my stupidity. I had to take my opportunity to razz him about the Atlanta Falcons because I don't know, that was just really funny that I had mentioned see you in the Super Bowl before it happened and then how everything played out. So shout out to Sean Maluta. Thanks again for, you know, speaking with us on this past Thursday evening. So that's going to wrap things up for our show this week. The boys and some set the table topics and hot takes will be back next week. Of course, before we get you out of here, we want to remind everybody to keep following thechairshot.com. for all your news, reviews, opinion, analysis, and podcasts. And you can also follow them on social media at thechairshot.com, no dot. That's on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you'd like to follow myself, I'm on Twitter at @E_Ames. That's AMES323. And if you want to follow Doug for some apparent reason, even though he's never on there, he's on Twitter at JerichoholicDB. The rest of the guys, Dave on Twitter at Davey_Adams. That's only one D in Adams. And then Joshua is also on there at SwirlyJ22, SwirlyJ22. So we will get you guys out of here like we usually do with our motivation music. No real pick this week. Once again, we went with something that pertained to our show. So this is Sean Maluta's music that you have heard on NXT and 205 Live. Once again, we will catch you guys next week. I know I make it look easy, but yo, you gotta believe it. Don't believe what you see, it's a show, yeah, we put in the work. We go hard till the sundown, we party hard till we come back. Don't be a fool by the cool, what we do, yeah, we put in the work. Young, wild, and out of control. They say I'm angry, but understand, yo, we don't talk a lot, nah, we go toe-to-toe.
to eat. Everybody expect me to pay the tab, and it ain't easy in the spotlight. When you nice, the whole world is gunning for your spotlight. It ain't easy being rich. Somebody gotta do it though. So it ain't easy being broke. They see the paparazzi, they hear the shouts. They see the tours with the sold out crowds. They see
the chairshot.com. Always use your head.